A man who has been lying under a bed for a matter of some 30 minutes, and while there has been compelled to listen to the sort of dialogue which accompanied a lover's reconciliation, seldom appears at his best or feels his brightest. There was fluff in Mr. Baxter's hair, a dust on his clothes, and on Baxter's face a scowl of concentrated hatred of all humanity. Lord Emsworth, prepared for something pretty wild-looking, found his expectations exceeded. He tightened his grasp on the gun, and to ensure a more accurate aim, raised the butt of it to his shoulder, closing one eye and allowing the other to gleam along the barrel.
"Have you covered, my dear fellow?"
he said mildly. "Don't point that damn thing at me."
"I shall point it at you. And at the slightest sign of violence..." "Clarence!"
It was Lady Constance who spoke. "Put that gun down."
"Certainly not."
"Clarence?"
"Oh, all right."
"And now, Mr. Baxter, I'm sure you can explain."
"Explain? What on earth is there to explain? The thing's obvious." "Can't say I've quite got to the bottom of it,"
murmured the Honourable Galahad.
"Fellow under bed? Why? Why under bed? Why here at all?" "My dear Galahad, think. That flowerpot affair, you remember?" "Oh, you mean, exactly. Yes, yes, of course. Subject to these attacks, you mean?" "Precisely."
"Clarence?"
"All very well to say Clarence like that. You know yourself he isn't right in the head. Didn't he throw flowerpots at me? Didn't he leap out of the window this very afternoon? Didn't he try to make me think that Beach..."
Baxter interrupted. "Lord Emsworth."
"Eh?"
"It has now come to my knowledge that Beach was not the prime mover in the theft of your pig, but I have ascertained that he was an accessory."
"A what?"
"He helped," said Baxter, grinding his teeth a little. "The man who committed the actual theft was your nephew Ronald." Lord Emsworth turned to his sister with a triumphant gesture.
"There! Now perhaps you'll say he's not potty. It won't do, Baxter, my dear fella. You really mustn't excite yourself by making up these stories. The Empress was found this evening in your caravan."
"What?"
"In your caravan, where you put her when you stole her."
"In my caravan?" Baxter passed a feverish hand across his dust-stained forehead. Illumination came to him. "Then that's what that fellow Carmody did with the animal." Lady Constance intervened.
"Clarence, will you kindly use whatever slight intelligence you may possess? The theft of your pig is one of the most trivial and unimportant things that ever happened in this world, and I consider the fuss that has been made about it quite revolting. Do ask yourself, Clarence, and try to answer the question as reasonably as is possible for a man of your mental caliber. What earthly motive would Mr. Baxter have for coming to Blandings Castle and stealing pigs?"
Lord Emsworth did not wilt beneath his sister's dominating eye. He met it boldly, and boldly answered back.
"And ask yourself, Constance," he said, "what earthly motive Mr. Baxter has for anything he does." "Yes," said the On Galahad loyally. "What motive had our friend Baxter for coming to Blandings Castle and scaring girls stiff by hiding under beds?"
"Mr. Baxter,"
she said, as if she were calling on him for an after-dinner speech. But Rupert Baxter had had no dinner. His eyes flashed through their lenses. His mouth tightened.
I will explain." "I knew you would have an explanation," cried Lady Constance.
"I have. A very simple one."
"And short, I hope?"
asked Lord Emsworth.
Quite short," said Rupert Baxter. "I came to this room," he said, "to try to recover a letter which I had written to this lady who calls herself Miss Schoonmaker."
"Well, of course she calls herself Miss Schoonmaker. It's her name, my dear fella. God bless my soul, if a girl's name's Schoonmaker, naturally she calls herself Miss Schoonmaker."
Yes, if it is. But hers is not. It is Brown."
"Listen, my dear fella," said Lord Emsworth soothingly. "You are only exciting yourself by going on like this. Now, what I suggest is that you go to your room and put a cool compress on your forehead and lie down and take a good rest. I'll send Beach up to you with some nice bread and milk."
"Her name is Brown," repeated Baxter. "Sue Brown. She is a chorus girl at the Regal Theatre in London, and she is apparently engaged to be married to your nephew Ronald. I overheard Beach saying so in this very room. Whoever she is an impostor who has come here under a false name. While I was in the smoking room some time back, a telegram came through on the telephone from Market Blandings. It was signed Myra Schoonmaker, and it had been handed in Paris this afternoon.
That is all I have to say, concluded Baxter. I will now leave you, and I sincerely hope I shall never set eyes on any of you again. Good evening. His spectacles glinting coldly, he strode from the room, and in the doorway collided with Ronnie, who was entering. Clumsy idiot, said the efficient Baxter, and was gone. In the room he had left, Lady Constance Keble had become a stony figure of menace, and Sue quailed before her. Ronnie, cried Sue weakly. What's all this? Asked the last of the fishes. Lady Constance wheeled round upon him. Ronald, who is this girl? Eh? Ronnie was conscious of a certain uneasiness. Something was evidently up, but it might be that airy nonchalance would save the day. Well, you know her, don't you? Miss Shoemaker. Met her with me in London.
Is her name Brown, and is she a chorus girl?
Why, yes, admitted Ronnie. It was a bombshell, but Eton and Cambridge stood it well. Why, yes, as a matter of fact, that's right. Words seemed to fail Lady Constance. Judging from the expression on her face, this was just as well. I'd been meaning to tell you about that, said Ronnie. We are engaged.
Clarence!
Hey!
Said Lord Emsworth. His thoughts had been wandering.
You heard?
Heard what?
If you have not been sufficiently interested to listen, I may inform you that Ronald has just announced his intentions of marrying a chorus girl.
Oh, ah.
So that is all the comment you have to make, is it?
Eh? What about?
The point I have been endeavouring to make you understand, went on Lady Constance with a laborious politeness, is that your nephew Ronald has announced his intention of marrying into the Regal Theatre Chorus.
Who?
Ronald! This is Ronald. He is anxious to marry Miss Brown, a chorus girl. This is Miss Brown.
Oh, how do you do?
Said Lord Emsworth. He might be vague, but he had the manners of the old school. Ronnie interposed. The time had come to play the ace of trumps. She isn't an ordinary chorus girl.
From the fact of her coming to Blandings under a false name, said Lady Constance, I imagined not. It shows unusual enterprise.
Look, what I mean, continued Ronnie, is... I know what a bally snob you are, Aunt Constance. No offence, but you know what I mean. Keen on birth and family and all that sort of rot. Well, what I'm driving at is that Sue's father was in the Guards.
A private or a corporal?
A captain. A fellow named Cotterley, said Sue in a small voice. Cotterley, said Ronnie.
Cotterley!
It was the Honourable Galahad who had spoken. He was staring at Sue open-mouthed.
Cotterley? Not Jack Cotterley. My dear, was your mother Dolly Henderson, who used to be a serio at the old Oxford and the Tivoli?
Yes, said Sue, she was. The Honourable Galahad was advancing on her with outstretched hands. He looked like some father in a melodrama welcoming the prodigal daughter.
Well, I'm dashed, he said.
He seized Sue's limp paws and squeezed them fondly.
I've been trying to think all the while who it was that you reminded me of, my dear girl. Do you know that in the years 96, 97, and 98 I was madly in love with your mother myself? Do you know that if my infernal family hadn't shipped me off to South Africa, I would certainly have married her? Fact, I assure you. They got behind me and shoved me on the boat, and when I came back I found that young Cotterley had cut me out.
Well,
never mind about that now, Galahad. The point is...
The point is, retorted the Honourable Galahad warmly, that young Fish there wants to marry Dolly Henderson's daughter, and I'm for it. And I hope, Clarence, that you'll have some sense for once in your life and back them up like a sportsman. Eh?
Said the Ninth Earl. His thoughts had been wandering.
You see for yourself what a splendid girl she is. Who? This girl. Oh, yes, charming,
agreed Lord Emsworth courteously, and returned to his meditations.
Clarence, you are not to consent to this marriage.
Who says so?
I say so, and think what Julia will say.
She could not have advanced a more impressive argument. Lord Emsworth's idea of happiness was to be where Lady Julia Fish was not, and the thought of her coming down to Blandings Castle and tackling him in his library about this business froze him to the marrow.
You think Julia wouldn't like it?
Well, of course she won't like it.
You think she'd make herself unpleasant about it?
I do.
In that case...
Lord Emsworth paused.
I'm going down to look at my pig.
Sue stood on the balcony, looking out into the night. Velvet darkness shrouded the world, and from the heart of it came the murmur of rustling trees and the clean, sweet smell of earth and flowers. She sighed. It was a night made for happiness, and she was quite sure now that happiness was not for her. A footstep sounded behind her, and she turned eagerly. "Ronnie?" It was the voice of the Honourable Galahad Threepwood that answered.
"Only me, I'm afraid, my dear. May I come onto your balcony?" "God bless my soul," as Clarence would say. "What a wonderful night."
"Yes," said Sue doubtfully.
"You don't think so?"
"Oh, yes."
"I bet you don't."
He rested his arms on the parapet.
"About young Ronald," he said abruptly.
"What about him?"
"Fond of him?"
"Yes."
"I mean really fond?"
"Yes."
"How fond?"
"I can't put it into words," said Sue.
"Well, never mind. I just wanted to be quite sure you really were fond of him, because..."
"Well?"
"Well, because I've just fixed it all up."
She clutched at the parapet. "What?"
"Oh, yes," said the Honourable Galahad. "It's all settled. The wedding bells will ring out."
"But how? Why? I mean, what's happened?"
"Well, you'll admit I might have married your mother."
"Yes."
"Which makes me a sort of honorary father to you."
"Yes."
"In which capacity, my dear, your interests are mine. The fact of the matter is, knowing how strongly my sister Constance has always felt on the subject of those reminiscences of mine, I went to her and put it to her squarely. Clarence, I said to her, is not the sort of man to make any objections to anyone marrying anybody, so long as he isn't expected to attend the wedding. You're the real obstacle, I said. You and Julia. And if you come round, you can talk Julia over in 5 minutes. You know she relies on your judgment. And then I said that if she gave up acting like a barbed wire entanglement in the path of true love, I would undertake not to publish the reminiscences."
"Oh," said Sue. Nothing more. Her feelings were too deep. She hugged his arm. She found herself crying.
"Now, come," said the Honourable Galahad protestingly. "Nothing so very extraordinary in that, was there? Nothing so exceedingly remarkable in one pal helping another?"
"I don't know what to say."
"Then don't say it," said the Honourable Galahad, much relieved. "Why, bless you, I don't care whether the damn things are published or not. Only cause a lot of unhappiness. I'll leave the dashed book to the nation and have it published in 100 years and become the Peeps of the future, what?" The Honourable Galahad chuckled. "It's a shame, though, that the world will have to wait 100 years before it hears the story of young Gregory Parslow and the prawns."